So please give a warm welcome tonight to our speaker tonight, Addie from the Craddock Oasis Home Group.
Hey everyone, I'm Addie. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Super glad to be here tonight. Thank you for asking me to be here, Mike. And thank you all for being a part of my recovery. I'm truly grateful for each and every one of you in these rooms. A lot of people I know, and then some are new faces. But I will try to remember your name. I might ask a few times, but bear with me. I'm just laughing because I have this little thing about me that anytime I'm going to like go up to speak or do something, or I give myself like a encouragement song as I'm walking up, right? So in my head, I'm like, we are the champions, my friend. I don't know why, I just do, and it always helps me, always ease the anxieties. And we are definitely miracles and champions in this room. So again, thank you all for being here. Again, my name is Addie. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Craddock Oasis in Portsmouth on Winchester. We meet 12 o'clock, noon, Monday through Fridays. And we are definitely a fun bunch. So if you haven't been there, come out and see us. We have a lot of fun activities. We do holiday event celebrations and all that. So definitely a lot of fun there. And I do have a sponsor. Her name is Gail. She's not here tonight. And I do, today I do have sponsees, and I do have one here tonight. I'm super glad she's here. So let me try to get started a little bit. I'll give a little bit of background of, I guess, who I am, how I was brought into this world. Well, not how I was brought, but, you know, after I was brought. So my first name is actually Adelaida. And with a name like that, no parent ever prepares their child for that kind of name growing up. And I think that's where my alcoholism started, because I had anxiety about my names as a small child. Nobody could ever say it right. So when I started school, nobody could say my name right. So I was always having like, when attendance would come, or you know, like we had a substitute and they'd like look at the name, and of course, you know, everyone was like, here's a name, last name, Hendricks, and I would just be like, that's me, you know, and, so I always had anxiety, like, in school about my name, and, you know, I wish my parents would have, you know, given me the tools to, like, defend myself against that, but they didn't, and I was named after my mom, so, you know, if she suffered, then so did I, so, yeah, I started having anxiety super young. I'm the oldest of four children. I have a brother and then two younger sisters. I'm from California, SoCal, woo-woo! Anybody else? Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm from like the LA area. And then before I moved to Virginia, I lived in like Chino, Ontario, the IE. If you all watch Sons of Anarchy, they talk about Chino, so you might hear about that. That's that Chino. But yeah, I moved to Virginia in 2018. The military did bring me out here. I love it out here. I do not plan on going back, so you all don't have to worry about missing me. I'm going to be here. you know, childhood, I had two parents who early on when I was young, they loved each other very much. They were affectionate. And I knew I was loved. I had a really good upbringing. We had a neighbor who adopted me as his granddaughter because him and his wife couldn't have any grandchildren. So I remember early on, you know, that was my grandfather, and he spoiled me like crazy. And so, when, you know, he died, that was probably one of the first times, like, I truly remember suffering. I asked not to go to his funeral because I just, in my mind, like, even to this day, like, death is not an easy thing for me. I like to remember people as they were alive. So, you know, that was, like, a hard blow when I was really young. And let's see, well, I'm trying to think of some. So yeah, you know, I had a really good upbringing. It was probably when I turned about 15, my parents started kind of drifting apart, And a lot of tension started at home with their marriage. And I mean, they stayed together until my dad passed away. But looking back now, they probably should have gotten a divorce. Remember just always thinking like, I think maybe because I was the oldest, you know, I was always taking care of my siblings. I internalized that like I could fix their marriage. I would send them out to like go run errands and I would clean the house and like cook dinner and like set up like a date on the table for them. Like always trying to like fix what was going on with them. So I've just always been a fixer. That's kind of how I mean, you know, I guess, and maybe it's just being the oldest. I'm not sure. But, you know, like I said, I had a lot of anxiety as a kid. Also, my mom, she's from Mexico and she has a very thick accent. So remember being in school and people would say like, that's your mom, you know, cause she just like, we were like nothing alike. And I would be like, no, that's actually the nanny, you know? And I used to lie and say that my mom was the nanny. And she found out one day, she got really upset. And you know, I just couldn't like, I was embarrassed, you know? And the thing, you know, I don't know if y'all know any Hispanic families or you belong to one, but my mother had a way of trying to teach me things by instilling fear. Like nothing was ever brought in honesty. It was like the scariest possible situation, and then that was gonna prevent me from doing anything I wasn't supposed to be doing, right? So I remember I was in third grade, so whatever that age is, probably like nine. And she told me, if you hold the boy's hand, you're going to get pregnant. My mom told me this, right? So, you know, you listen to your mom. And I remember in third grade, a boy grabbed my hand. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm pregnant, right? So, I mean, I laugh about it now. But for 3 years, I thought I was pregnant. Like, I wouldn't go to a doctor's appointment. You know, if you got like indigestion, I'd be like, there's a baby. You know, like it sounds crazy today, but to live like that when you're such a young kid, like with anxiety, like, and you know, hello today, like that's not how babies are made. But when you're so young, you're just so impressionable. And, you know, there's so many instances like that where my mom, you know, would just say things like, oh, if you go on a roller coaster, you're going to die. And I would be like, oh my God, like I can't go to, you know, to Disneyland, or I can't go to Magic Mountain because I'm going to go on the ride and I'm going to die. So, you know, I would just anxiety with that, like the school field trips. You know, I was always going to get kidnapped anywhere I went. Couldn't go with no friends because I was going to get kidnapped. And so, you know, I lived this like very anxious life, you know, just with those. And she told me one time that cats give you this weird disease. I can't remember what she said it was called. I think now looking back, it was a superstition. And so I remember telling everybody who had a cat, like, you're going to get this disease, you know. It's just like crazy, outrageous things. But nonetheless, I knew she loved me. You know, my mom, she never called me outside of my name. She never cussed at us. She never put us down. Now, my dad, on the contrary, he grew up in a household where verbal abuse was like, you know, was nothing. He got knocked upside the head. It was like no big deal. You got beat, like whatever. And so I grew up with, you know, our father like verbally and emotionally abusing me and my sisters and my brother. And then when then it turned to, you know, what was happening to my mother. And my mom, I was probably about 12, she said, we're getting in the car, we're going to go see an attorney. And I'm like, for what? She's like, I'm divorcing your dad. So I remember being like 12 and driving with her like to go see an attorney and like knowing all these things. And looking back now, I'm like, you know, like no child should have to be put through that. And that's probably also like where I started like trying to fix their marriage, because I remember seeing her cry. And my dad acted that way. And then, you know, I was thinking, gosh, if I could just act right or act better, then maybe it was my fault. Like, maybe I could help fix this. And I would tell my siblings, like, we got to act right, y'all. We got to act right. Like, mom and dad are fighting. And so anyways, you know, things had just kind of turned that way. And it was like that, you know, for for years, and just the verbal abuse, the putting us down, calling like this awful names. Like, I didn't even know what some of the words were that was I was being called. And so, you know, even through all that, I still try to put on like a happy face. And, you know, I mean, school was good. I did well in school. Well, kind of well. I remember in high school, like, I really didn't do homework. I was refused to do homework, but I was such a good brown noser. I think I still have a smudge. That, you know, I'd pass all my classes. I used to make cupcakes, like, almost every day and take them to school. Like, give them out. Like, you know, like, I was, like, earning my way around. I didn't want to do homework, but here's cupcakes. You know, like, let me plan this for the class. And I've always been a planner. That's my thing. Like, I love to plan things. And, so I started, like, really, you know, really young age doing that and being part of, you know, ASB and, like, putting together all the dances and all that, you know, fun school thing. So, yeah, so I managed to pass through all my years with honor roll. You know, probably, I've definitely would not, like I said, not doing the work, but I had this one teacher, he said, you don't do your homework, but let me ask you, I'm going to quiz you real quick, a pop quiz, come up here, and I was able to answer all the questions, so I had a really good memory. I don't forget things, that's one thing about me, it's actually to my fault that I don't, but, so yeah, he did that, and, you know, gave me an A for the class and everything, so, but yeah, so that was in high school, and I didn't, I was not in with the crowd that liked to party. I actually frowned upon the people who showed up at the dances drunk or like sloppy. Or I remember friends would be like, we're going to go to this house party this week and you want to come? I was like, absolutely not. Like, I have no, you know, like I learned something in their program. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to go. And I remember thinking, okay, well, yeah, in fifth grade, like I had a DARE class, so I'm not going to go do that because I know what drugs will do, you know, and, so I think back, you know, now I thought I was better. I thought that the people that partied and did drugs were like out of control. And so I stayed away from that, which I, you know, I'm glad that it was like that in high school. I was able to keep some years good there. And see, my parents, after I graduated high school, my parents lost their house. It was during, like, all the, when the mortgages, like, boomed and everything. They lost their house. And I remember, like, in 3 years, we moved, like, 5 times. And that was the most awful, just, you know, always packing. Like, finally, the last place, we're like, we're not unpacking. Like, we're just gonna just stay, you know, live out of boxes and suitcases and stuff like that. So, that was probably, it was probably around 20, no, 19. I had already graduated high school, and that's when I actually started drinking. I remember some friends from high school were like, come on over, you know, like, just let's go to a club tonight. I've never been to a club, you know, like, I was like, okay, like, what is this club going to be like? And some, it always, like, I pictured it on TV, right, like, what a club would be like, and, I remember one of the guys were like, I got a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And I was like, what's that, you know? And to this day, I still remember what I was wearing. I was wearing some red corduroy Dickies and some of those Doc Martin creeper shoes. I don't know if y'all know those shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, a little crop top. And I remember taking the, you know, the bottle of Jose Cuervo and drinking. And I thought, I got to pretend like I know what I'm doing. You know, I didn't tell them this was the first time I was drinking. So I remember just drinking it and just like feeling it and, you know, passed it along. And I remember as I passed it along, I couldn't wait till it came back to me. I loved that feeling of like the heat, the warmth. Like I remember feeling like just my kind of body slowly go numb and laughing and not being so uptight. And, you know, just like totally relaxed. Like I think for the first time I felt like that physical relaxation that I have never felt. You know, like the tension off the shoulders was gone. Like everything, right? Like everything around me was kind of like the picture was painted differently. And so of course, I kept drinking, and they were like, "Well, we're going to the club," and I was like, "Let's go to the club," you know. So we go to this club in Long Beach, and you know, I mean, the night was kind of choppy, but I remember just like dancing on the tables, dancing on the pool table. I mean, just so, you know, I was having a blast. Like, I had no care in the world. I didn't care what people thought about me. Like, I didn't even think about any kind of consequence or how it would feel the next morning, because I'd never experienced a hangover. And I remember that hangover. I remember getting home, and my mom was like, what in the heck? Like, and I was coming in with, like, Del Taco and all this stuff, I remember waking up, and I just felt like, you know, death. And I said, I'm never going to do that again. I'm never going to drink ever again. Like, I had my taste. This is why I don't drink. This is why I don't drug. And that was Friday night. And then, of course, that same night, my friends were like, let's go to a club. I said, okay, but I'm not going to drink, you know. Well, no, that didn't happen. So we went, they picked me up, and you know, same thing repeated. And so I went on like that for, gosh, you know, I had my goals, my ambitions. I did not even care anymore. I wanted to be a teacher. I was like, I'm not going to school. You know, I was enrolled in like junior college. I stopped going to school. And one of the nights that I was at the club, somebody came up to me and they said, do you want a job for MAC Makeup? And I said, oh yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I got a job with MAC Makeup, and I worked with them for a few years, and I loved it because I got to drink all the time. I got to go to clubs. I did makeup for like drag shows. I mean, it was like, in my eyes, like I was living the life, you know, the nightlife, and then sleeping all day. And, you know, I did that for years. And, you know, I think back too, you know, I lived so dangerously in my alcoholism. I didn't know I was an alcoholic then, but my friends and I, we would go to like, I don't know if y'all heard of TJ, Tijuana, you guys know Tijuana? Yeah, okay. We'd go across the border, and there was this club out there called Club Safari, and you know, it was $10 to get in, and the bar and bartenders just had gallons of already pre-mixed booze. It was like AMFs. I don't know if y'all know what AMFs are. That's that blue drink. And then it was like Long Island's on this side. And they would just pour it in your cup. And you know, thinking back now, it's like, I'm so grateful that I wasn't like kidnapped, trafficked, you know, like something was spiked in that drink. I mean, I know it's by the grace of God today, but put myself in so many situations. And so yeah, you know, I ended up finally getting fired from MAC. I was drunk, you know, making a fool of myself. And then I thought, okay, well, you know what? I don't, you know, that's not what I want to do anyways. I want to be a police officer. And so I started going, I went back to school, and I took classes, you know, criminal classes and everything. And while I was doing that, I got my first DUI. Yeah, go figure. And I, you know, I got a DUI going to my class, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, like when I was in jail, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a cop. That scratched that one off. Like, I'm done, you know? And, that's just how I did things. And, I remember, oh my gosh, so much. I remember I was coming back from a club, going to class. I had my change of clothes in the trunk. I had on this like neon fishnet dress, okay, with like a bathing suit under and heels, right? I get pulled over with the DUI. They handcuff me with this outfit, right? So I go to jail, and I was more concerned that they were gonna think I was being arrested for prostitution. So I said, okay, I'm here for a DUI, y'all, just so you know. That's it. Nothing else. I know what this looks doesn't look right, but it's not what you think, you know? And just even like in there, just, you know, it was crazy. So anyways, you know, DUI did all the, you know, lengthy classes. I had to go to court, of course. So they said, okay, well, we're going to send you to AA. I said, okay, I like AA. I heard of AA because my high school, my boyfriend in high school, his mom was in AA. I didn't know what it was. All he told me was because she used to drink a lot and she goes and like hangs out with her friends, right? Which is true, you know. But, and so I remember this woman, her name was Debbie, and she, the way she lived her life, I remember like being so attracted to the way she lived her life. Like this woman was just like an amazing person. And, but I didn't know like what, you know, 12 steps, all that. I didn't know what she was doing, but I knew she was going to AA. So when the judge was like, okay, you know, here's your thing. You gotta go to AA. I said, okay, I think I could do what Debbie used to do. Go hang out with some friends and everything. And she would have get togethers at her house. Like, okay, I can do this. So I remember going to, my first AA meeting, and it was this, it was at the Alano Club in California, and just being like, what is this? Like old mugs hanging on the wall, you know, like the room was just like, it just smelled like old and dusty, and there was like bikers in there, and just but there was a mix of like young people, old people, and you know, I remember them handing me a reading and I was like, what's this? Like, can you read this? I said, yeah, I can read. They're like, no, can you actually read it when we ask? I said, oh yeah, sure, you know. And I just remember, you know, of course, I had to be the first one to raise my hand to share and tell everybody how, you know, how they would drink too if their life, if they had the people in their life like I had, right? Like it was at that time, who was it? Which hostage was it? Oh, it was my Chilean boyfriend. If you had the boyfriend like I had, you would drink too, right? And I just went down, and if you had the parents I had, you would drink too, you know. I got to do, you know, I got, wanted to do this. I got fired, all that stuff. I remember they said, just keep coming back, right? And I'm like, what the heck does that mean? Like, you know, y'all want to see me again? Like, am I that great? You know? And they kept saying, keep coming back. And I was like, why do you keep inviting me? Like, they must like to hang out with me. So dumb. Now I know what they meant. I needed to come back. Now today it's very clear that I wasn't there to help them. They were there to help me. Well, maybe I was there to help them, to remind them why, you know, they need to stay sober. And so, you know, I did that and got my paper signed, and off I went back into the world, you know, back into society. Still doing I was drinking when I was going to AA. I would like leave there, go get, you know, get my drink on and everything. And so then the first time somebody had my Chilean boyfriend sat my mom down, and he's like, I think she might be an alcoholic. And he printed out like this thing on like alcoholism symptoms, like behaviors. And I remember saying it and just like threw it at him. I was like, you don't know what you're talking about, you know? And my mom's like, no, maybe like you should read it. And I didn't. So of course I had to dump him after 2 years, because he's not always going to tell me I can't stop drinking, right? And so then, you know, again, just back to my lifestyle. Oh, and then I decided to go to cosmetology school, because I figured, like, well, I like doing hair, you know, I like all this, so might as well, I got to do something, you know, something's got to pay the bills. So I went to cosmetology school, and, you know, I liked that too, because what do we do after class? What do we do at night? You know, we would go drink. And at that time, I was also a server. I was working at Applebee's. And, oh my gosh, you know, it's just I was drinking every day. I was drinking every single day. You know, I remember putting, like, I would take the tea bag, like, the little papers, you know, the string with the paper off the bag, and put it in the coffee cup, and there'd be wine in my cup. So it would look like a tea, but it was really wine in there. And I just thought that was perfectly normal. You know, I thought it was perfectly normal that I worked much better when I was buzzed. And, you know, I mean, that's just, that's like that warped thinking, right? The delusion of the alcoholism already, like, clearly, fully just exploding. And so cosmetology school, and I had met then my ex-husband, and we had a child together. And I remember when I was pregnant thinking, oh my gosh, once I have this baby, this is the answer to my prayers. This child is going to help me stop drinking. I mean, that mother nurturing instinct is going to kick in. So why would I drink? You know, like, I'm finally going to grow up. Like, I'm finally going to have something to live for. I'm finally going to get my, you know, stuff together and live perfectly ever after in a white picket fence, and he's going to marry me. And so, you know, I hate to admit, but it's definitely part of my story that even through my pregnancy, you know, I did drink. And thank God, you know, by the grace of God today, that everything turned out okay. But I was that alcoholic that even in pregnancy, I could not stop drinking. And I remember, you know, like, my friends and family were, like, so concerned. They're like, what's going on with you, you know? And so anyways, you know, we had our son, and I went back to meetings because I knew that I needed to pacify some people. Like, I needed to shut them up, so I'm going to go back to meetings. So it looks like I'm trying to, like, work on myself. Right? I'm trying to work on myself so I can work on them. And that's what I did. I did that for a while. I went back to the same Alana club. Oh my gosh, y'all would drink too if you had a husband like mine, you know? And they were like, I remember you, and all that stuff. So, you know, I had another child, and I thought, well, I'm definitely going to stop now. And, you know, the same thing. I had my my daughter. She's 14 now, and, you know, sad to say, after she was two, like, her father and I did get a divorce, and I thought, oh my gosh, like, this divorce is going to alleviate so much of my stress, like, I'm going to stop drinking. Like, this is what I needed. I need this divorce. And so I moved, you know, the kids and I moved, and I was, you know, I still drank. Could you believe it? Like, I still continued to drink. But now I was drinking because life was great. I thought, oh my gosh, like, the husband's gone. Got these two kids. They're going with their dad every other weekend. And all this stuff. So I, what did I do? Like, I drank. And at this time, I was already graduated from cosmetology school. And I worked at a barbershop. And, you know, like, that, from working there, was like the perfect place to drink, because clients would bring me bottles, you know, holidays, birthday. I mean, even we would just drink. Like, we served wine, we served beer. I mean, it was like I just blended in the mix, right? And so that, I, you know, remember thinking too, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm drinking too much. My dad was really upset. You know, there was this one time, oh my gosh, he was like, you're not going out tonight. I'm going to come and check on you. And I said, all right, Dad, I'm not going out tonight. And sure enough, I called my friend Mercedes. Mercedes, let's go to El Pescador. Let's go get some margaritas. And so she picks me up. And she didn't know the full extent of my alcoholism. She knew I liked to party and I was going out a lot. But we're sitting at this restaurant, and she's like, is that your dad's car driving around? Because it had a car wrap. His business was wrapped around his little Scion. I said, oh my gosh, there's my dad, you know. I was like, oh my God, I gotta hide. So I hid under the table, and he comes in the door. My dad's this, like, big Irish redhead man, big burly brawny man, and he's loud and in charge. And he's like, Monique's my middle name. Monique, I know you're in here. And, like, it's loud, right? There's music playing. You can still hear him. And I'm already, like, how old am I at this point? Oh, my gosh. I'm in, like, mid-20s, something like that, right? Acting like a child. And he came. He saw my friend Mercedes. So he's like, where's Monique? And he's like, is that her feet? You know, my feet. He's like, are those her legs? And, you know, my legs were sticking out on this little, like, two-seater table. He said, you know, get your up. He's like, I can't believe you. I'll be damned. And that's how we talked. And he's like, get in the car. Mercedes, you know better. You know better. Like, you know, blame, my dad's blaming Mercedes for, you know, his drunk daughter. And so, you know, we get up and we go. But there's just, you know, so many things like that where just, you know, my parents, you know, I just put them through so much. And but the one thing, you know, I'll say, like, my parents did try to hide my alcoholism, especially from, like, my ex-husband and stuff like that. Everybody knew, but they don't want him to know, like, the extent of how bad I was. And there was this one time at work, I was so blitzed. I had a lady's hair in foils. I couldn't even finish the job. I was like, I can't finish. Like, I'm so blitzed. And I went out in the back. I was like, let me go have a quick cigarette. Now I got to come down from this buzz. And so I go back there in the back of the shop, and I don't know how long I was out there for, but when I came back, my friend was like, the cops were in here looking for you. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, yeah, somebody had called the cops in the salon and for, you know, drunk in public. And I was in the back. Nobody ratted me out, you know, but how when I think back now, like, how embarrassing. I mean, it was that obvious. And I was just so mortified. It was probably my client. She's probably like, this drunk woman doing my hair, you know, called 911. But, you know, even with that, so I had that very, like, I'm getting away with a lot of things, right? I'm getting away with things. Like, there was really nothing, like, at that point stopping me. But when I was married to my ex-husband, cops were called a couple times. I was taken to jail. Apparently, I don't know, it's what he said, but I, you know, was in a blackout, so he could be right. I broke a bottle over his head. I don't know. He could be lying. Probably not, you know? And so just like things like that, just acting crazy. And so, you know, I'm over here working at this place. And what year was that? So we're skipping forward a little bit. I'm not going to go through my whole drunk series. But, you know, 2017 comes, and I meet the next husband, and we end up getting, really quick. So I had met him when I worked at a salon back in 2008, and he was my client, and we had reconnected after my divorce. We reconnected in February of 2010. We reconnected in February, and we ended up getting together in March, married in April, he deployed in May. I mean, that was my life, you know, it was like, what can I do right now to get out of the situation I'm in? So anyways, I only have 10 minutes, but I'm going to skip forward a little bit and, you know, have my third child with him, have my fourth child. We moved to Virginia in 2018. In 2018, when I moved here, I no longer had my parents to pick me up after, you know, all my messes. I got sober in Virginia Beach over at the VBRC, and I was sober for 2 years, and then COVID came, and I stopped going to meetings because everything was closed, and then I started homeschooling because everything was virtual, and 2.5 years after, you know, I stayed a dry drunk for 2.5 years, but after we moved to over here in Suffolk, we got the keys to the house, and lo and behold, I'm by myself, I opened the fridge, and there's a boxed wine in the fridge, and I thought, oh my, I did not wake up that day thinking I was going to have a drink, but I remember thinking, like, this must be like, and this is a nice housewarming gift, like, this must be meant for me, right? I remember having that one glass that one night, felt like smooth. That was like Frank Sinatra cleaning the floors over there at the house. And then the next day I had that one glass, you know, one solo cup from the box. The third day there was no more cups, so I'm drinking out the box like this. And, you know, that's all it took. And I was just off to the races. And my friend Michelle actually brought me to this meeting after that time, and I sat over there like drunker than a skunk. And you know, I was like that for a few months. Probably I was out for about 10 months. My dad had died. I flew to California. I couldn't stay sober out there. I was drunk the whole time. I'm supposed to be planning the memorial. I'm drunk. We had no memorial. And from there, I had, you know, my bags packed. So my son actually was like, you need to go to rehab. And I came home that same day. Actually, you know, Marie took me. I went straight to rehab in Florida. I was there for a month. And, you know, I came out. And I got, again, like, reconnected with AA over at the Craddock Oasis. And, you know, I'm so grateful today that, you know, they say it takes what it takes. You know, it took me 15 years to actually, like, grasp the importance of, first, the higher power, the 12 steps, the fellowship, like, the community, you know. There's nothing today that I won't do to put my sobriety first. I have missed my kids' birthdays to come to a meeting. I will sponsor women. I told myself in the past, I'm not gonna get a sponsor. I will sponsor myself because nobody knows me better than me. I will not sponsor anybody because I have four kids and they are my sponsees. I will not speak because I don't like, you know, I don't like attention. Well, that's a lie. So, you know, there's all these things. And, you know, so I was just fooling myself, right, putting these roadblocks up. But today I'm just so grateful for AA. You know, it's a program of action. And I've been, like, watching one of my favorite, like, pastors and stuff who's in recovery talk about, like, just, you know, the program of recovery. And he said, when life gets lifey, God gets gaudy. And I thought that was amazing. And then I made a joke, and, you know, we say, hey, Siri, right, can you play? Hey, Siri, can you call? Well, it's like, what if we can say, hey, higher power, can you do this? You know, just things like that, like, really stick with me. And that's how I stay connected to God today. And being connected to God really allows me to open myself up to what the program has for me. You know, I don't like to suffer today. If I'm upset for more than 30 seconds, I'm calling somebody. Like, I cannot sit in my mess. I cannot. I will bug you. I don't care. You tell me to call you, I'm going to call you. And that's what I do today. You know, I pick up the phone. I love doing the service work. To me, it's not even like work. It's just like, it's community. It's just it's giving back. I have so much fun. I have more fun than I think you all do, you know, doing all this stuff. And here, this says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Being with like-minded and relatable fellowship. You know, I tried getting sober in church. Did not work for me. Hands were laid on me. I was baptized 4 times. I spoke in the holy tongues. The ghost did not work for me. I did it all. I really did, you know. I did everything close to being a Muslim. And I was like, this is not working. I can't listen to these people who have no idea what it's like to be an alcoholic. So I remember that. Another one says that, you know, we wait on perfect. We wait on perfect people. We wait on perfect. We wait on being pain-free. He who regardeth the wind never sows. You know, I've turned my will and my life over regardless of the situation. That's my first action. You know, AA is a program of action. You know, if you have bad breath, you don't pray, you brush your teeth, right? You got to take action. So that's today, you know, what my life looks like. It's, you know, I get to pray, but God's like, okay, well, you pray, so now what are you going to do about this? How are you going to turn it over? And I love it. And I love that I don't have to be lazy anymore, because in my natural self, I am a very lazy person. And then another one says, suppose God knows before the situation what happens. Let's see. Before God knows, before the situation happens, the end he intends to use it. That's why I owe God praise. And I love that, because it's true. Like, you know, if I knew the situation, I don't know how it's going to be used. I just know that God's going to use it in a certain way. And, you know, like today I have purpose. Like, I feel like I have purpose. I don't measure my success and how much money's on the bank or in the bank. I measure my success, you know. Did I hurt anybody today? No. Okay, that's a check mark. You know, is my family healthy? You know, it's just the little things. The less I have today is so much more for me. You know, I'm unapologetically myself. I get to be myself. I don't wear the masks I used to do or have, one at work, one at home, one at church, one here. Like, I didn't even know what mask I was wearing anymore. And today I get to be exactly who I am, and I love it. So yeah, it's the difference in what I need, want, and what I'm capable of. You know, today I'm capable of being honest. I can be honest with myself, honest with my sponsor, you know, even with my friends, like honesty to a degree, right? I don't want to, you know, offend anybody. But just the honesty today, I know what it looks like. You know, I don't have to white lie. I don't have to like lie by omission or anything like that. And it's really freeing. You know, I get to sleep good at night. But, you know, Harris, I thank God for my challenges and opposition, for if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't reach and cling, right? Some days I'm literally clinging, reaching. I mean, all I'm just hanging on by, like, just the thread. Without resistance, there's no resilience. And without the opposition, there's no opportunity. And that's how I feel, you know. There's no opposition, there's no opportunity. There's no opportunity to grow. And another thing, too, you know, the whole, I used to be a really big gossiper, and I don't, you know, today I want to love on everybody. I want, if I have anything to say, and it has to be, get spread, I want it to be words of love, you know. It says here, when you vent, you invent. And it's so true, you know. Why do I open up that file to vent? I just, I don't know. Life today is so good. I'm so grateful for you all. I would not change my life for anything. It is just a life that has given me more than I could ever imagine, you know. And I'm going through something really crazy right now that I never thought I would go through in sobriety. But I'm handling it with the help of you all. And, you know, I just cannot imagine. And when I say I love you all, I truly mean it. I don't just say that because you all really are important in my life. And I look forward to seeing you guys all the time. If I could do AA all day long, I swear I would, but it does not pay the bills. And I got to pay the bills, sadly. You know, but anyways, thank you all for coming out to listen. And thank you all for being a part of my recovery. I really do love each one. Each and every one of you. Thank you. Thank you.